Ladies and gentlemen, we are back again here on the Mush Squad podcast, episode 14. Back again with my boy JG12. How we doing, 12?
I could be a lot better.
Yeah, I hear you. We'll talk about your sports depression and your Lakers fanship in one of our later segments. It is Super Bowl week, though. It is Super Bowl week. For some reason, I've been checking the mail every few hours. Our passes for Super Bowl, our credentials, our sideline passes, have not come in yet. Either way, we're still going to be covering the Super Bowl from A to Z. Yeah. Everything Cincinnati Bengals, everything Los Angeles Rams, everything Super Bowl 56. So that's what we're going to start off with. We do have a friend joining us for one of our later segments talking prop bets. None other than the kid himself, Parag Patel. Join us on some of his insight. A gambling aficionado himself, just like we are, talk some prop bets. We will cover everything NBA trade deadline, including the James Harden trade, the Kristaps Porzingis trade, and everything in between. But like I said, young 12, let's start it off. Super Bowl 56, this upcoming Sunday, February 13th, 6:30 p.m. kickoff on NBC. At SoFi Stadium in Los Angeles, we've had 54 consecutive Super Bowls. No team plays in their own stadium. The last two, Tampa Bay plays in Tampa Bay, Raymond James. And this year at SoFi, the Rams are essentially hosting the Cincinnati Bengals. First and foremost, instant reactions, thoughts on the two teams and their path and their journey to Super Bowl 56.
Well, I mean, if you look at the Rams were kind of like get to this position or bust for the year. They have no money in the salary cap to spend whatsoever on signing players. They have no draft picks in the foreseeable future. So all of their basically team equity is tied up with this win now team. So I think as a Ram, as watching the Rams throughout the year, you kind of expected them to be here or as close to the Super Bowl as possible. And now with Matthew Stafford in his first year, they're here in the big game. So, I mean, this is what you do as a franchise when you want to win now. You put everything behind the team and you go and you get it. And that's exactly what the Rams did. The Bengals, on the other hand, kudos to them. We've talked about them plenty of times throughout all these episodes. And all under 25, I'll go back to that stat, all under 25 years old. So they're going to be problems for years to come. And if they're able to somehow pull off this Super Bowl win, it has to be one of the greatest stories in NFL history.
Yeah, you know, we've been preaching it. I know I've said it multiple times over the last few weeks. The Cincinnati Bengals fans and their franchise have been enjoying this ride and kind of riding the wave. And if at any point during this playoff run they lost, they couldn't be upset unless it was a bad call or something by a foul or a bad play, something like that. But every week, wild card, divisional, conference, Joe Burrow, Joe Shiesty, and these young Bengal Cubs have been getting the job done. And they've gone through some incredible competition. You know, the AFC was stacked this year. I don't care what anybody says. Yeah, the Steelers made the playoffs, but the AFC was stacked, as the NFC was. And week in and week out, they get their first playoff home victory in God knows how long. They go into Kansas City, upset the Chiefs in overtime, get that victory, and onward and upward for these Bengals. So again, super excited for this Super Bowl matchup. No real dog in the fight. When we talk Mush Squad bets of the week, we may kind of split hairs here a little bit, but that's okay. But let's start off the line, 4.5. I think I've seen it as high as 5 points. Rams are favorited. Cincinnati is getting 4.5 or 5 points. Thoughts on the Rams being the favorite?
I think they have every right to be the favorite in this game. However, if you've been watching probably the best playoffs in NFL history as well. Every game has come down to a last second field goal. So I think that the line's a little high. I think it should be right at that 3 number. I wouldn't be surprised if there was a little movement dropping it down to three, but shoot, plus 4.5 with the Bengals, it looks a little juicy.
Yeah, it looks good. It looks good. Over under, they're looking, I'm looking at 48.5, 49.5 now. Me personally, I think it's going to be a shootout. Both defenses are strong. Both have put up good performances through the playoffs. But I think, and we'll break it down in a moment here, I think both offenses have the firepower and the wherewithal to outlast the defenses. Thoughts?
No, absolutely. And even I touched on it last episode as well, that the Bengals kind of have like this makeshift defense of like all these nobodies and the misfits.
Outcasts.
Yeah, from other teams that have been playing at a high level all season. And then you got the Rams with Aaron Donald and Von Miller and Jalen Ramsey. Yeah. So that's going to be tough for them to stop.
So let's start off. Let's break down the first matchup we're going to see. The Rams offense versus the Bengals defense. We talked, you just mentioned this misfit group of outcasts and castaways that the Bengals have on defense. But this postseason so far, the Cincinnati defense, and try and dive into it a little bit deeper, 6 interceptions so far through 3 games, 2 forced fumbles. That's 8 turnovers. That's 8 turnovers they've created. I know you mentioned Eli Apple, one of the cornerbacks who've been cast off, but who else is on this Cincinnati defense that you would consider someone who could be a playmaker to make a play?
Well, even they're one of their best pass rushers, Trey Hendrickson, in the postseason, 2.5 sacks and 6 tackles. He had a concussion, I think, in the wild card game, but then he came back and he's been their number one pass rusher all year. You got Sam Hubbard, Logan Wilson, who was top 5 in tackles in the NFL, I believe, this whole season. So, I mean, they have quality players. They don't have all pro players, might it, but they all just come together and play as like a whole unit.
They click together as a unit.
And they make plays like that where they don't have one standout, where they all just come together collectively and they make plays together like that.
I like the defensive back combination. Von Bell at strong safety. He's got a bunch of tackles this postseason coming up as kind of like that monster back, as kind of like that additional linebacker. You've seen him blitz a bunch during the postseason too. Jesse Bates is that free safety, kind of that center fielder type, can lock up somebody one-on-one. He's a cornerback playing free safety, which is cool. And obviously all these defenses are throwing extra dime backs, nickel backs out into the secondary because you've seen the prolific passing offense through these playoffs. And I would expect the same with the Cincinnati defense. Now, the Cincinnati defense has gone up against some good offenses this postseason, but have they gone up against any offenses that look like these LA Rams led by Matt Stafford? This postseason, Matt Stafford is on fire. 3 games, 72% completion percentage, 905 yards, 6 touchdowns, and here's the key, only 1 interception. Thoughts on the postseason playoff run that Matty Stafford is on right now?
Well, I think everybody was waiting for these type of performances from Matt Stafford throughout the whole season, even his career going back to Detroit. Like they were all just waiting for a team to finally be around him so he could showcase what he can do. Back to what you touched on, they played, the Chiefs are very similar, I would say, to the Rams.
Right.
And I'd even maybe think the Chiefs have a better offense than the Rams, but all year, who's been the best player in the NFL? Arguably Cooper Kupp. He's playing wide receiver for the Rams. It's virtually impossible to game plan for him. If you try to double him, McVay finds spots where it's like, oh, well, we really can't double him if he lines up like that. Or if he lines up off the line behind a running back, behind the tight end, we can't really double him like that. And then you double him, then you got Odell, you got Van Jefferson, you got Tyler Higbee. And it's just, you know what he's going to do, and they still can't beat him. Like a Tyreek Hill type of situation where you know what he's capable of, and you still can't stop it.
I want to give Odell some flowers here. in the postseason, 19 receptions, 236 yards, and a touchdown. He's had a born-again season this year after his hellhole career in Cleveland. So give Odell some flowers for that. But like you said, Cooper Kupp, arguably the best offensive player in the league, could be and should be, we'll find out later tonight, offensive player of the year. You would think someone who put up the stats and numbers he did in the regular season would kind of fall off a cliff a little bit come postseason, or come back to reality at least. That is not the case. Through three games, 25 receptions, 386 yards, and four touchdowns for the Coop man. It's incredible. It's insane. He is full-fledged, arguably the best receiver, arguably the best season a receiver has had in NFL history.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more.
It's crazy. But yeah, you got to also give the Rams some kudos for this two-headed monster they have in the backfield now, trading for Sony Michel. I want to say preseason week 3 or 4 from Buffalo. Yeah. They weren't using him. Cam Akers is, I believe, month number 7 away from when he tore his Achilles. Yeah. Combined for 230 yards rushing and no rushing touchdowns from the two of them. Stafford does have 2 rushing touchdowns this postseason, but if Cam Akers and Sony Michel can hold on to the ball, which was an issue when they were in Tampa Bay, you know, Cam Akers had a few fumbles in Tampa Bay in that matchup, but if they can hold on to the ball, they will also be arguably offensive weapons. Agreed?
Absolutely. Sony Michel, he's been part of the Patriots organization, so he's been in situations like this before. I think he could be a real X factor for the Rams going forward because I love his running style. He runs hard. He runs downhill. So he could catch the ball out of the backfield. So he could definitely potentially be an X factor going forward in the game.
Who has the advantage? Rams offense, Bengals defense?
I think teams have yet to stop the Rams offense this year. So I'm definitely giving it to the Rams offense right now.
I agree with that. I think the Rams offense is and has been virtually unstoppable. Stafford had that stretch of bad games where he was throwing interceptions left and right, but he's corrected that. He's in a good headspace. And when you have Cooper Kupp on one side and Odell Beckham on the other side, not a bad 1-2 combination. 12, let's flip the script real quick. Let's talk Cincinnati Bengals offense versus Rams defense. Just like we started with the first one, let's talk this Rams defense. Run down some names and stats real quick. Aaron Donald in the postseason, 1.5 sacks, 9 tackles, 2 tackles for loss. Von Miller, somebody who looked like he gave up on the game of football 7 weeks ago. And he wasn't healthy. He wasn't playing right. Denver didn't want him anymore. Denver gave up on him. Denver traded him to the Rams for, I think, a bucket of footballs and a kicking tee.
A bologna sandwich.
No mustard, though. 2 sacks, 12 tackles, 4 tackles for loss. Jalen Ramsey has 9 tackles, 3 passes defended. Eric Weddle. Let's talk about Eric Weddle for a second. Eric Weddle, this time 7 weeks ago, was retired and not playing in the NFL for a duration of 2 years. They had that injury in the secondary going into the postseason. They signed Eric Weddle, someone familiar with the franchise, the defensive scheme, someone who they know is a leader and won't make mistakes. And he's got 13 tackles and a tackle for loss this postseason. Talk about this Rams defensive unit, 12.
Well, like I touched on before, they kind of went all in on the defense, signing Von Miller, and then even before that, 2 years ago, when they traded most of their picks to get Jalen Ramsey. But another, just a strong unit defense. You can't double Von Miller. You can't double Aaron Donald, because then it frees up one or the other. Their linebacker unit is strong. Taylor Rapp as a safety is a monster. They're legit. They're as legit as you could possibly be. And it's Cincinnati. What they do, they gave up 12 sacks so far in the postseason, and it seems like Joe Burrow's been running for his life damn near every game that they played in. And to his credit, he's been able to get away a few times, make a bunch of big plays don't during it, but they got their work cut out for them, and I'm so interested in how they're going to scheme for such a strong defensive line.
And something that offenses do to kind of help protect the quarterback is leave the tight end in to block, or chip with the tight end, or chip with a back or something like that. CJ Ozama, who is the tight end for the Bengals, is coming off an MCL strain or sprain, to the point where for the last 3 weeks, he's been in a knee brace. Yeah. So whether he's lining up on Von Miller's side or Aaron Donald's side or wherever he may be lining up, how much of a difference is this tight end going to make? Listen, Rob Gronkowski is one of the greatest tight ends of all time, not necessarily just for his receptions and Super Bowl victories as a member of the Patriots and Bucks, but because he gets in the dirt and blocks like a motherfucker when time comes, when it's needed.
Absolutely.
And this tight end is going to be what, maybe 60, 70, 80%. Imagine someone going 80% up against Aaron Donald or Von Miller. Not something I'd be looking forward to if I was CJ Uzama. The rest of the Cincy offense, though, a well-oiled machine. We talked Joe Burrow. Yes, he's been sacked 12 times, but he's got 842 passing yards, 4 touchdowns, and 2 picks this postseason. Joe Mixon, 190 yards on the ground, and 1 rushing touchdown. It's the only rushing touchdown for the Bengals this postseason. Ja'Marr Chase, what can we talk about the rookie that hasn't been said already? Best season by a rookie receiver of all time, I'm assuming.
Absolutely.
Could we say best season by a rookie offensive player all time? I mean,
could very well say
that. Gotta be in the argument. 20 receptions this postseason, so just about 8 receptions a game, 279 yards, and he has that touchdown. Thoughts on the Cincy offense?
Well, just like how we were talking about the Rams have all those offensive weapons on their side, you flip it right back. Cincy is the same exact thing. I'd maybe even give them the edge with a couple more receivers than that the Rams have. Right. Because you're looking at Tyler Boyd, who's a 1,000-yard receiver, T. Higgins, who's a 1,000-yard receiver. Now you throw in the young rook, Ja'Marr Chase, who's the best one out of all of them, plus C.J. Uzama. And Joe Mixon, again, so they're younger. They got a few more receivers. So they're definitely, if they're able to protect Joe Burrow and give him time, or maybe go into a hurry up more often, or like you said, chip him with the backs, chip him with a tight end before he's running out for his route or something like that, just to give him that extra second or that extra little bit of time in the pocket, I think the Bengals could put on a show.
All right, so who has the advantage, the Bengals offense or the Rams defense?
Oh, this one's tough. This one's tough, but just from I'm going to go with the Rams. I'm going to go with the Rams.
The Rams defense. So we have, and I'm in agreement on this, and I'm not, again, sound like a broken record, not taking anything away from Cincinnati and the Bengals and what they've done.
It's super close because, like I said, they're loaded on offense.
Right.
But I'm going to have to give it to the Rams just because they got some dogs on that side.
Yeah, it's going to be exciting. I'm excited to see Ja'Marr Chase, Jalen Ramsey matched up for hopefully the whole game. I'm excited to see what that defensive line does against this porous Swiss cheese-looking Bengals offensive line. And I agree with you. I think the Rams defense, I think it's like a 52-48 percentage type thing.
Yeah.
So, you know, the other thing we'll talk about very quickly before we bring Parag on for these prop bets, special teams, both these kickers are all pro caliber. Matt Gay, Evan McPherson. Evan McPherson, as a rookie, he's got a cannon attached to his leg and he's had one hell of a season. I think regular season that he went 28-29. Hasn't missed one in the postseason field goals. Matt Gay, same thing. When he's been called on to kick, he's kicked, and he's kicked the ball hella far and hella accurate. So, you know, special teams is kind of a toss-up. I might lean Cincinnati because McPherson has that cannon on his leg. Thoughts on special teams?
Well, I mean, I'll definitely lead towards Cincinnati just because McPherson called his shot and sent them into the AFC Championship game.
Yep.
But yeah, they're definitely two young kickers who are freaking rockets of freaking feet. Yep. That Legatron-esque back in the day.
Yeah.
But yeah, they're definitely fun to watch.
Yep. Head coaches. We'll talk about this very quickly. Sean McVay for the Rams, and the name's blurring out of my head right now.
Zach Taylor
for the Bengals. Thank you. Zach Taylor is a Sean McVay protege. Sean McVay comes from the Shanahan / Gruden tree of coaching. They all know the same terms. They all have the same type of coaching frequencies, same type of coaching advantages and things they know. Is this a coach looking at himself in the mirror for this? What's going on with this matchup? Who has the advantage?
I'm gonna have to give it to McVay just because he's been in this situation before. He's been to the Super Bowl already. Zach Taylor's still kind of that unknown coach still, where it's kind of like every week he's surprised. Meanwhile, you know what you're getting with McVay week in and week out. So until Zach Taylor is at that level, I think you're going to have to give it to McVay every day, all day.
I agree with that as well. I think McVay has taken his team to the Super Bowl before with a quarterback as inept as Jared Goff. And yes, he's had weapons. He's had the defensive players, but he's the guy who, along with Wes Snead, the GM of the Rams, decided they're going all in. So yeah. I like it. I like it a lot. We're going to pause real quick here and bring our friend Paragin. And back here on the Mush Squad podcast, as promised, bringing a good friend of the program in, a fellow Mush Squad member, Mr. Parag Patel, a.k.a. The Kid. What is up, The Kid? How are you, my friend?
What's going on, guys? What's going on?
So the reason we're bringing you on, obviously, it's Super Bowl week, Super Bowl 56, less than 72 hours away.
Can't wait.
We want to talk Super Bowl prop bets with you. As a gambling aficionado like ourselves, I know you did some research. You got some prop bets you want to talk about. I want to kick it off because I got one that I think is a lock to make money. I think it's I think it's a lock. All right. So I'm going to start it off. John, you and I, right before we brought Parag in, so we're talking about the matchups of both the Bengals and the Rams and how both special teams have strong kickers, both on Matt Gay and Evan McPherson. So the one prop bet that I know is good money. It's at plus 130.
Ooh, I like this one too. I circled it.
Super Bowl 56 first scoring play.
I like it too.
Field goal plus 130. Because I think it doesn't matter which team gets the ball first. They may drive down the field a little bit. Both offenses are really good. And with these legs of both these guys, as soon as you cross midfield, you're practically in field goal range.
True. And it's indoors.
So I'm going as one of the prop bets that I'm taking, field goal as the first scoring play, field goal plus 130. What are your thoughts, Kid? What do you got?
I like it. Like I said, indoors, Matt McPherson can kick over 50. Matt Gay's got it at his home stadium. Yep. So you should know how is this far as distance can be.
All right. John, you in on that one too?
Yeah, actually, I had that one circled as well. I was a big fan of that one. It's crazy that the touchdown's minus 180. I thought that was a little high even. Field goal on the first scoring play or whatever it is. It's definitely because, like you said, everyone's going to be – it's inside. They're going to drive down the field, and then eventually they're going to stall out maybe right there at the 40, and then they're just going to boom a field goal, I feel like.
Yep. I like it. I like it. Garris, what do you like? What's another prop bet that you were looking at?
I have a couple. Big fan of the anytime touchdown scorers because these ones got some good odds always.
All right. So give me one and tell me why you think that person will score a touchdown.
I'm going to go with Odell Beckham Jr. Plus 120. Anytime you get plus money, you got to take something.
Soon to be first time.
So Super Bowl props. Any plus money is good.
Yeah. Any plus money. Of course. And it's like, it's right there where it's like, it's just enough where it's like, it's going to, it could really happen. Like, not one of those outlandish, like plus 500, plus 600. Like, it's right there. Plus, like, we were talking about Cooper Kupp and all the other weapons on that side. So Odell could definitely see a lot of single coverage, especially in the red zone.
We could see Odell scoring a touchdown as a commemoration of his first child being born. His girl, his wife, his baby mama is on the verge of going into labor. So we could have a Super Bowl baby and a Super Bowl touchdown for Odell Beckham. Hey, Parag, hey, the kid, what do you like?
Actually, a little Odell Beckham too. I like his longest reception over 23 and a half.
Okay. Odell and over
23. As Garrett says, plus money, I have, it's props, so small stuff. Most receiving yards at plus 800 Odell Beckham for the game.
Ooh, that's a juicy one. That's
just because everyone's going to be,
all right, favorites. So
Chase will be with Ramsey.
Right.
And as Cooper Kupp, everyone's talking about him, he's killing it. I feel like they got to be shadowing him. I have to be shadowing him.
All right, so let's talk about that. Let's dig into that for a second. So Odell leading yards for receivers, plus 800.
Yeah.
My only concern with that one, I'm not saying I hate it, but my only concern with that one is I think Cooper Kupp's going to have some sort of a game. I don't know.
Yeah.
He doesn't have those 30, 40-yard receptions unless he's playing your Tampa Bay Bucks in the playoffs. but he's going to have double-digit receptions in this game.
That's true. But like Garrett said, it's all about props and plus money. Cooper Kupp is plus 120.
But my only
plus money, but plus 800 for a little coin.
Put a little coin. But my only concern is all Van Jefferson has to do is break one or two.
Get one catch, yeah.
You know, and that we're gonna go into that in a moment as well on why I like Van Jefferson for yards, at least his yards over. Because I like a lot of things when it comes to overs in this game for the Rams offense.
Me too. I have one that correlates with a Van Jefferson, not a Van Jefferson, but a prop that because who he is.
Yep. So on top of the ones that we just talked about, I like Matthew Stafford longest completion over 39 and a half. Kind of goes in correlation to
that's what we talked about.
Odell. We talked about Van Jefferson, Cooper Kupp. All he needs is one of those guys to break it for 40 yards. He's got three passes this year that have gone 70 yards or more, and he's got 13 passes this year that have gone 39 and a half yards or more. He's got the cannon.
Right on the number.
He's got the receivers. I think it's going to happen. Stafford, longest reception over 39 and a half.
Completion.
Yeah. Longest completion. Sorry. John, what do you think?
I like that one. You've seen they definitely take their shots regardless. He'll throw it in a triple coverage. He's just a gunslinger like that. So even piggybacking off of Parag's, if Odell ends up with the most receptions or receiving yards in the Super Bowl, he could be in contention to probably win Super Bowl MVP too.
But they'll probably give it to Stafford just because quarterback. You know what I mean?
You never know.
Unless
Julian Edelman won it as receiver.
True. Yeah.
And then also, I'll throw one more into mine that he's taking Odell longest reception. I'm going to take Jamar Chase under longest reception of 26 and a half yards. I think they're going to be blanketing him the whole game, and they're going to force the other guys to beat him. And I think Jamar Chase is finally going to have a down game in this game.
I could see it.
I can see that.
Jalen Ramsey, who's arguably the best cornerback in the game. There's no doubt in my mind that the Rams have manipulated their game plan so that Jalen Ramsey is shadowing Jamar Chase. Yes, Tyler Boyd, and yes, CJ Uzoma, and Joe Mixon, those are weapons, definitely. But we talked about it earlier, and Parag, obviously you're a football fan as well. What Jamar Chase has done this year as a rookie in this league after taking a full season off.
It's crazy. It's absolutely crazy. It's crazy. That's got to be the best rookie in our generation I've seen.
That's what we talked about
before. As a receiver.
Arguably. What else you got, Parag? You got any more?
I got two that almost exactly correlate with each other.
Sure.
Joe Mixon receptions over 3.5. It's gone over the last five games he's played. And the one that didn't was against the Chiefs, but it was 3 catches.
Okay.
And that correlates with over 27.5 receiving yards for Joe Mixon, which also it's gone 4 of the last 5. Over 27, and the one that didn't was 27 yards. He's basically hit over 27 yards last 5 games.
So Mixon receptions over,
and receiving yards over.
I like it. I think both of these offenses are gonna move the ball. And when you have a Cincinnati offense where the receivers are gonna be matched up roughly against this Rams secondary, and when you don't have the luxury of an offensive line that can keep you standing on your 2 feet, Joe Burrow's gonna have to be checking it down and dumping it off.
Exactly. Yeah, that's why. Especially what do they say? The best pressure on defenses is right up the middle, and then
right up the middle.
Aaron Donald, best in the game.
What do you got, Garris? You got any more you're looking at?
Actually, I really like that one because Joe Burrow is going to try not to make any mistakes, really. So every time number one's not open, number two's not open, he's just going to start checking it down. Charlie Checkdown, a.k.a. Joe Slack.
And checking out Joe Mixon is not really a check down. That guy is elusive too. No, obviously, like you said,
That's the safe throw. I'll run down everything else that I'm a fan of real quick.
Yes, sir. Please do.
I like, speaking of the kickers earlier, both – I don't know why this number is so low. Over 1.5 field goals made. You can get Matt Gay at -160. You can get McPherson -185. So it's a little bit of juice you got to go behind them. But I think that's easy freaking money. That's 2 field goals from each of them.
Yep.
Oh yeah. Especially as Joe said, if one of the first scores is a field goal for either one of those guys.
But I mean, you get that one over with, then you go the whole thing. You get the whole game. You just need one.
Yep, that's what I was thinking. You just need one.
I also like Matt Stafford to not throw an interception +105.
Okay, I like it.
And then my last of what I had, the circle. Well, these are shots in the dark.
Hey, that's fine.
Anytime touchdown score, Van Jefferson, we talked about him, +245. And then Tyler Higbee, +230.
I like the Higbee one.
Yeah,
he's always there.
Yep. Parag, anything else before I run down my last two?
I think it's three. The more of game props now. Will there be a 2-point attempt -150? Yes. And then will a successful 2-point conversion? Yes, at +250. I like that. And then will there be an onside kick? I mean, it's a Super Bowl. If you're going to be down, you're going to have to kick it. At +150,
you might see it.
Good value.
You might see it.
Successful 2-point conversion was +250.
Yeah.
Damn, that's a good one.
Right? Those two correlate together too. Because if you even it out, as long as they attempt it, you should break even.
Yeah.
Depending how you do it, but
I got 2 or 3 more I want to share. Some of them correlate together, and then there's none of them are real, like, shots in the dark. I think they're all minus money. But, hey, minus money still means you're making money if you get it right, right?
It adds up to something.
I got Cam Akers over 63.5 rushing yards. I think the Rams are going to control the time of possession. I think they're going to want to slow the – listen, it's a home game.
Yeah, I agree.
It's a home game. So they're going to want to control the stadium, set the pace. And how do you do that? You run Cam Akers 18 to 22 times this game.
Just don't fumble.
Just don't fumble.
Yeah.
I don't care if he fumbles or not because it's not part of my prop bet.
As long as get those yards.
He's got to save the game. He's got to get the carries, though.
That's tied awesome. To the Cam Akers rushing prop is the Rams to record more time of possession. I have it at -120. All they need to do is have 1 second more time of possession than the Bengals. I could see them coming out in the third quarter on their first drive, going for like a nice 8-minute drive, like they did. I think it was in the conference championship.
I think the Niners, they flip-flopped the game plan. Yeah, they
flip-flopped it and
they dominated.
My other two, I have. I think this game is going to be a shootout. I think it's going to be a high-scoring game. Matt Stafford over attempts 35.5. You don't think he's not going to throw 36 yards? 25 of 35, 26 to 36 gets the win for me.
Yeah, I can see that.
You know, that's up. Tom Brady did that in the first half of the game.
Yes, Eagles game.
You know what I mean? Yes. And I got Van Jefferson over 34.5 yards receiving. It just takes one. All it takes is just one. 34.5 for Van Jefferson. Combine that with the over for longest reception. I'll get them both on one pass. So that's what I'm playing. Yeah, that's perfect. What I'm thinking. All right. So we talked prop bets. I need both of you at the end of this. Make sure you text me those prop bets. I'll get them up on social media on Super Bowl Sunday for our followers to follow along with us. So we talked everything under the sun when it comes to Super Bowl. We talked matchups. John and I, we broke down offenses versus defenses, head coaches, special teams. So Parag, as our guest, I'm going to have you go first. Super Bowl 56 is this Sunday. You have the Bengals plus 4.5 or 5, depending on what book you're looking at. Rams minus 4.5 or 5, depending on what book you're looking at. Over under 48.5. Mr. Parag Patel, a.k.a. The Kid, who do you have winning this football game and why?
I got the Rams winning. I think you want me to give a prediction score?
Yeah, let's get it on.
I think the Rams win 31-20.
31-20.
Some of it's like you said. I think they control the pace. They're home. Better defense. And I think the Bengals are a good story, but I do think their time has come.
Yeah, I like it. So,
that also means the over two. Yeah, I guess I'd like the over two then.
The over hits.
31-20.
The Rams cover. Looks like that's the way you're leaning. I like it. John, we'll talk about it when we go to our Mush Squad bets of the week.
I think I need to wait a little bit.
We'll talk about it when we go to our Mush Squad bets of the week. But we're in for one hell of a Super Bowl game, guys. We're in for one hell of a Super Bowl. I'm excited to watch. I'm going to be posted up on the couch with all the COVID stuff still going around. I'm going to sit on my couch with a six-pack and watch the game.
I hear you.
All right. Parag, we're going to be transitioning to a little NBA talk. You want to hang around or you want to hit the road? It's up to you.
I'm going
to
hit the road.
All right. Let's go. All right, my friend. Listen, we appreciate
you. This was fun, guys. Awesome.
Thanks for coming on. We'll have you again. March Madness right around the corner, my boy.
Love it. Love it.
All right. Appreciate you. We'll see you soon.
See you soon, guys. Later.
Hey, yes, sir. So, once again, thanks to Parag Patel, a.k.a. The Kid, jumping on with us for the prop bets segment. John, we're supposed to be talking all Super Bowl 56, but we kind of put that in the bag already. Today was the NBA trade deadline, and did Waj drop the bomb like his name was Funk Master Flex? I'm going to run through a few of these, but obviously the big one is James Harden going from the Brooklyn Nets to the Philadelphia 76ers for Ben Simmons. We'll save that for last. I'm going to run through some other trades that happened today, significant things that happened in the NBA world, and significant teams that didn't do a damn thing. Starting off with the Trailblazers earlier in the week, trading CJ McCollum to the Pelicans alongside Larry Nance Jr., Tony Snell, in exchange for Josh Hart, Tomas Satoransky, Nikhil Alexander Walker, a first and 2 seconds. So the Pelicans get that guard, that shooter, that smart veteran player to eventually line up alongside Brandon Ingram. And if Zion ever gets back, Zion Williamson. Thoughts on this move?
It's definitely, I think it's a win for the Pelicans. I think that right now they sit at the 9 seed in the West. So that's like right there in the playing tournament type of games. Yep. But CJ McCollum, everybody forgot about him. He's a quality guard. He can get you 15 to 20 any given night. That's what you need. You need veteran leadership, veteran scoring. Whether he starts, whether you want him to come off the bench, it's going to work out for the Pelicans. And hopefully we get to see Zion play this year. It's a real shame. He was an all-star last year, and it's just wish he could come back.
Hopefully health is wealth in the NBA. Hopefully he's healthy, man. A big four-team trade broke earlier today. The Sacramento Kings are getting Dante DiVincenzo, Josh Jackson, and Trey Lyles. The Detroit Pistons are getting Marvin Bagley, so he's free out of Sacramento. The Bucks are adding Serge Ibaka Block of Flame, which is a listen, I don't care how long he's been out of his prime. He's a rim defender, a shot blocker. And the Clippers are getting Rodney Hood and Semi Ojeleye, who's, I think, a backup guard for one of the teams. So a four-team trade. Big pieces, obviously, Dante DiVincenzo, the shooter, Marvin Bagley, Serge Ibaka. A lot of moving pieces, including the Bucks, the defending champs, trying to get better. Thoughts on this?
I think the Kings made a few more moves, too. Him, and then they traded Halliburton.
Yep.
I don't know if I jumped the gun on.
No. Go for that, yeah.
Halliburton and Buddy Hield. And then they got Sabonis in exchange. So I don't really know what the Kings are doing.
I have no idea what the hell they're doing.
I thought Halliburton was a pretty decent player, but, I mean, Sabonis is an all-star.
Right.
So I don't know if they're trying to – I thought, oh, hey, maybe they're trying to win this year. Then I go and look in their standings, and they're 12th in the West. So
and I'm like, and I know that where was I just going with that? I know Buddy Hield has been having a down year this year, like,
yeah.
But Sacramento as a whole is having a down year. And the rumor going into the trade deadline was they were going to move De'Aaron Fox.
Yeah.
And the only person they didn't move was De'Aaron Fox.
So then that's what I was thinking. Maybe they're trying to get pieces around him to make him want to stay or something. But then it's like Halliburton, it was his second year up and coming player. Right. Arguably the second best player on the team, and you deal him.
Doesn't make sense to me, but that's why they're the Sacramento Queens. You know what I mean? The Raptors traded Goran Dragic and a protected first round pick to the Spurs for Thad Young, Drew Eubanks, and a second. It's more of a Spurs cap saving move. They're going to cut or release or waive Goran Dragic, who will probably re-sign with a contender somewhere. Clippers already rumored. Miami Heat are rumored for a reunite to back up the guy he was traded to Toronto for.
Kyle Lowry. Lowry.
But yeah, I know. Celtics trade PJ Dozier and Bol Bol, both of which are out for the year with injuries.
Yeah.
And a second round draft pick to the Orlando Magic for a second round draft pick. So essentially all that was the Celtics shedding cap space. They're now under the luxury tax. Both Dozier and Bol are out for the season. And I'm assuming the Magic will end up cutting or releasing one or both of them at the end of the season as well. We're going to save the big one for last. Suns acquired Aaron Holiday, adding guard depth behind Chris Paul and Devin Booker. They're so far ahead. Them and the Warriors in the West,
yeah.
Any additional rest, you can get CP3 or Devin Booker down the stretch before the playoffs is making the season that much longer for you guys.
Especially when you know CP3 has a long history of like not finishing the seasons and getting hurt in the playoffs. So a guard depth is always great to
have.
He was on
JJ Redick's podcast this week. I don't know if you heard it. And JJ called him out, was like, during the Lakers series, remember when he was having the shoulder injuries?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Could you even shoot the ball? And Chris Paul was like, no, I couldn't even raise my arm above my shoulder. He couldn't even shoot in that series. That's how bad he was hurt. Rockets traded Daniel Theis to the Celtics for your boy, Dennis Schroeder, Enes Freedom, and Bruno Fernando. They're going to cut Enes Freedom. The Rockets are. Wasn't Daniel Theis on the Celtics at some point?
Well, he got traded. I'm pretty sure he got traded from the Celtics to the Rockets, and now they just traded back for him. The NBA is weird. The NBA is weird when it's not a blockbuster deal and you do these like little ticky-tack deals. It's freaking weird.
Weird. Porzingis from the Mavericks traded with a second for Spencer Dinwiddie.
I didn't understand
that. And one. Davis Bertans for to the Wizards. So I don't get it. Porzingis, again, isn't having the best year, kind of a bust. Spencer Dinwiddie, they kind of went all in on him. He was had a tremendous year a few years ago and then was hurt last year with the Nets. The Wizards signed him. He went to the Wizards for a big bag, and they trade him halfway through the first season with the Wizards.
And it's kind of like, where are you going to put Dinwiddie? You got Luka starting. Brunson is more than a capable backup that
right.
could be starting on mostly any NBA teams. So are you going to do three guards or something? Porzingis is a good piece to have right. just because he's a big that could score any which way possible. Yeah, he's a bust, but he still can get you 15 and 10, 10 and yeah. 10 every night. But I don't know. Wizards lost Beal for the season, and I guess they lost their mind in the process.
Crazy. And then it all comes down to this blockbuster, the Woj bomb that was dropped 1 o'clock this afternoon. The rumors were there the last few days. The Brooklyn Nets are sending James Harden alongside Paul Millsap to the Philadelphia 76ers for Ben Simmons, Seth Curry, Andre Drummond, and two first round draft picks. Break it down. Who won and which team's going to be better in the future?
I think the Nets hands down won. You can like take out a couple players and just the two first round picks that you probably gave up for Harden and you get those in return. Listen, Harden, I don't know. He's probably the biggest prima donna basketball player that I ever watched. I never understood how you go from one team requesting the trade, then the very next season you request the trade from the team that you just requested a trade to go to. But I think the Nets, you get Seth Curry, a proven three-point shooter. You got Joe Harris, who's probably going to be out for the rest of the year. He can fill that void. You got Ben Simmons, a facilitator. Everyone's like, oh, he can't score. He can't shoot. He can't shoot foul shots. He's not going to need to. All he's going to need to do is lock down their best player, their second best player, and rebound and facilitate. Yep. You put them at that small forward position, power forward position, however you want to do it. And then you just have Kyrie run the point, ball movement, Durant when he comes back, you know, he's a dog already. Right. And he's just he's not going to be in a role where he's going to be looked on to score. So I'm excited to see how the Nets mesh and how they come together when all the pieces are healthy and 100%. And then going towards the Sixers, I think that they made a pretty decent move. Tyrese Maxey has been having
him is a big W for them.
Yeah. Yeah. And Tyrese Maxey has been a really good player this whole season. And you bring in Harden so maybe he doesn't have to play much of a point guard role and then he could just play that shooting guard position, right. which honestly he's probably better at. And you're just adding another guy that can get 20 a game every single game. So I think Sixers could be right behind the Nets, but I think I'm going to give it to the Nets.
Yeah, I think the Nets won the trade because if you remember what they gave up last year for the trade, it was like a multi-team trade to get Harden to Brooklyn. But all they lost was Caris LeVert, who nonchalantly also got traded over this last week. Jared Allen, who has turned into an all-star caliber big man in Cleveland. He got his bag. He got paid. He's still putting numbers up. So big ups to him. And three firsts is what you gave up. So you get two of those three firsts back. And you get Andre Drummond to provide depth off the bench. So for Brooklyn, you have your potential starting five right now. You're looking at Kyrie. You're looking at Seth Curry, Kevin Durant when he gets healthy, Ben Simmons, LaMarcus Aldridge, say, right? You have off the bench, you still have your Blake Griffin. Now you have Andre Drummond. So you have the big man depth to go up against, I don't know, Joel Embiid, to go up against, I don't know, Giannis Antetokounmpo, the big towers in the East. So I think it's a win-win. I think both teams got what they wanted. But I think the Sixers made out well because they didn't have to trade Maxey. Maxey was that key that the rumor was the Nets kept saying, I want Tyrese Maxey. We want Tyrese Maxey. But the Sixers starting lineup, man, Harden, Maxey, Danny Green gets to move to the three to stretch the field, stretch the floor. Tobias Harris at the four, and Joel Embiid, who's arguably the MVP of the year this year, having a tremendous season. Joel Embiid is the MVP. They play each other in a month from now, in 1 month from now. And Ben Simmons has already talked to KD. Rich Paul, his agent, which Clutch Sports, has said he is gearing up to get back. So we could see a month from now, Nets, Sixers, I think it's in Philadelphia, and seeing James Harden going up against the Nets and Ben Simmons back on the basketball court going up against the Sixers.
Yeah, that's going to be must watch basketball.
Must watch coming out. I'm excited. Again, the world has revolved around the NFL the last few years. Super Bowl Sunday is this Sunday. Next week, we're going heavy NBA, heavy college basketball. Might sprinkle a little Olympics in there, okay? Got to love that ice skating, a little curling action. You know what I mean?
Hey, we're watching the curling last night. Don't sleep on the curling. Curling.
But yeah, NBA trade deadline has come and gone. I'm excited to watch. Obviously, we have the NFL awards tonight, Thursday, but we also have the all-star captains selecting their teams. And imagine KD drafts James Harden. Never know.
What the fuck, bro?
Never know. All right, last few segments here on the Mush Squad podcast. Let me break it down for you. We have Stump 12, Patrick Ramsey, Random Athlete of the Week, and the Mush Squad Bets of the Week coming to you right now. As always, we do our Mush Squad Stump 12. Grab a random card. No. The undefeated streak is on the line here.
Oh, man.
Pull the random card. Three questions. It goes easy to hard. First question. Which of these NFL quarterbacks have never won a Super Bowl? Johnny Unitas, Dan Marino, Eli Manning, Drew Brees.
Dan Marino.
Dan Marino is correct. The best to never win one.
Best ever.
All right. Question number two. Who caught the 61-yard Minneapolis Miracle touchdown to give the Vikings a 2018 playoff win over the New Orleans Saints? Do you need options?
No.
Who is it?
Trayvon Diggs' brother.
Who's that?
Stephon Diggs.
Oh, the better Diggs. The better Diggs. Stephon Diggs is correct. Yep. That was incredible, that game.
That game will forever be one of the craziest times I've ever watched a football game.
I know. I feel bad for our boy Philpo. No, that was a good thing for Philpo.
Shout out Philpo, though. This segment, he would kill this segment.
Oh, yeah. Trivia god. I'm going to give you a little hint on this one.
All right.
I swear I randomly picked one card, okay?
All right.
Which team did my boy Ricky Williams play for in 2002 when he led the NFL with 1,853 yards rushing? The Ravens, the Saints, the Dolphins, or the 49ers?
Is it the Dolphins?
It's the Miami Dolphins. Swear to God, I just picked a random card.
Another week.
Insane. Insane.
I'm not going to lie, man. I get nervous because I don't want to miss one.
And for the record, you don't know the cards. Like, I pull a random card.
There's 300
cards in here.
That last one was a little tricky because I'm not sure if he ran.
Could have been.
Yeah, if he didn't run for that much for the Saints. But I know he had some good years in Miami.
Patrick Ramsey, Random Athlete of the Week. brought to you by, we're doing a little tweak on this one and not necessarily an athlete. We'll get to that in a second. But as always, brought to you by Off the Wall Donuts for all your Super Bowl parties, your first communions, and everything in between. Off the Wall Donuts is that donut wall company to present the dopest donuts on a goddamn wall. At @off_the_wall_donuts on Instagram. Hit them up, hit them up. The topic this week, Mr. 12, Super Bowl winning head coaches. Doesn't mean they've been in the Super Bowl and they don't have a win. There's only been 55 Super Bowls and there's been a hell of a lot less coaches because there's some repeats. We'll probably have some repeats ourselves, but that's okay.
Probably, honestly. Try not to go too old with it.
I didn't go too far back either, so don't worry. I got three. You got three. May the best man win, okay? First one is from me. This head coach has led two different franchises to the Super Bowl. He lost his first time, and he won his second time. Both times he was in the Super Bowl, he represented NFC teams. The first time in Super Bowl 15, and the second time 19 years later, Super Bowl 34. His Super Bowl win, Super Bowl 34, came at the helm of arguably the best offensive season in NFL history, nicknamed the greatest show on turf. You got it?
I think so.
Who is this coach?
Dick Vermeil.
Dick Vermeil is correct. He was the head coach of the Rams when they beat the Titans 23-16 and was also the head coach of the Eagles that lost to the Raiders in Super Bowl 15. Dick Vermeil.
He was a good coach. He was a good coach. I mean, the hell of an offense, but he was definitely a player's coach.
Absolutely. You got it.
All right, here we go. My guy led two franchises to the Super Bowl as well.
Oh, no.
However, he only won with one of them.
Okay.
He coached from 1986 to 2008. Being a head coach for two different teams. He led his team to Super Bowl 31, where he beat the Patriots 35-21. He has a career record of 174-122. I don't know what else to say. So
his playoff win, his Super Bowl win, his team beat the Patriots in the Super Bowl.
Super Bowl 31. His team beat the Patriots. 35-21. Super Bowl 31. He also later led another team to the Super Bowl, but they did not win.
But they lost.
Yes.
Was that second team the Seattle Seahawks?
Yes.
And is this coach Mike Holmgren?
Yes, it is.
Sauce.
That was a good one, bro. That was a good one. I thought that was a little tricky guy.
That was a good one. Because that was the pack. I was Brett Favre's Super Bowl win.
Brett Favre's Super Bowl win, and Drew Bledsoe was the quarterback for the Patriots. Yeah.
Crazy. All right, two more for me. This head coach also led his team to two separate Super Bowls, winning one and losing one, but both with one franchise. So he was the head coach of this team and brought them to the Super Bowl twice. They won one and they lost one. His win was Super Bowl 43 by a score of 27-23. His loss was Super Bowl 45. By a score of 31-25. His loss gave Aaron Rodgers his first and only Super Bowl victory. And his win was supported by arguably the greatest catch in Super Bowl history. Also, I know you're shaking your head, so you got the answer already. also still currently the head coach of the same franchise. Who is this coach?
Mr. Shape Up himself, Mike Tomlin.
Mike Tomlin it is. I mean, I forgot about that second Super Bowl for a little bit.
Yeah, that's Aaron Rodgers' only Super Bowl win where they made it. The Steelers were good for a while, bro.
Yeah, only time
Aaron were good for a while.
Only time Aaron Rodgers made it past the NFC Championship game.
And that's crazy because that team was nothing special compared to some of these teams that he's had in the past.
I know. That had a New Jersey great Ryan Grant, I think, was on that Super Bowl.
Yes, he was. Patrick Ramsey, random athlete as well.
Absolutely. All right, you're up.
My guy is only went to the Super Bowl one time. He actually hasn't had a very long coaching career.
Okay.
He won Super Bowl 50 when he defeated the Panthers 24-10. He only has an 87-77 career coaching record. He only coached from 2006. You know who it is?
Yeah, I got it. The name was stuck up there, but I got it. I know who it is.
All right, go ahead.
Gary Kubiak.
Oh, damn, man. I thought I was going to have you with this one.
Gary Kubiak. Hand-picked head coach by Peyton Manning himself.
Yep. Because
John Fox couldn't get the job done.
And just another random freaking coach that has a Super Bowl win.
Another random head coach. All right. This one's going to be hard. This is probably the hardest one.
Oof.
I don't know if you have the mindset. I don't know if you have the information here for this one, okay?
Oh, man.
This head coach is not only a two-time Super Bowl winning head coach, but he also has a national championship under his belt. His two Super Bowl wins were won by a combined score of 82-30. In back-to-back Super Bowls.
I know who this is already.
He also coached my favorite team, the Miami Dolphins, after he finished coaching your favorite team, the Dallas Cowboys.
You just both sitting with me, man.
Great, both sitting. Who's this man?
Jimmy Johnson. Bring him back. Dang, come back. Make Dallas great again.
That's your boy for life.
Oh, man. Once you started saying it, I was like, wait one goddamn minute.
You probably knew right after two Super Bowls, one natty.
Two Super Bowls, and with that combined score, that's when the Cowboys used to just roll over the Bills back to back.
Run the score up.
52-14. That's my favorite Super Bowl. I was 6 years old, but that was my favorite Super Bowl.
What was the Garris household like during that Super Bowl?
I don't remember because I was only 5 or 4. That's funny. But right. No tears like they are. There usually is.
Yeah. This last is one. If I get it right, we tie. If I get it wrong, you win.
This should be pretty simple. My guy was the head winning football coach in Super Bowl 52 when they beat the Patriots. 41-33. He has a career coaching record of 46-39 and currently is employed by a football team.
Does he like visors and vanilla ice cream?
He loves
it. That's big, all we heard
big
about.
Big ice cream guy.
Doug Peterson with the
Eagles. Yes. Also, a pretty good journeyman backup quarterback for a while from 1991 to 2004. He was a backup for the Dolphins, Panthers, Packers, Eagles, and Browns.
Wow. So he's been around town a little bit, you're saying?
Yeah, he knows the vibes.
All right. So, John, we've covered everything. Super Bowl 56. We talked prop bets. We talked we brought Parag in. We talked NBA trade deadline. We talked Patrick Ramsey, random athlete of the week. We talked Stump 12, our last thing to do. Mush Squad Bet of the Week. I don't really want to talk about how we've been doing the last few weeks, but you and I came to a discussion. I think we're going to both bet on the Super Bowl. So we have the Rams and Bengals. Rams are 4.5 or 5-point favorite, depending on the book. And the over-under is 48.5. If you don't mind, I'll go first.
Shoot.
I like the Rams money line.
Oh, safe bet.
And I also like the over.
Okay.
48.5. My final score, my prediction score, Rams 28, Bengals 21. Rams 28, Bengals 21. We just get the over of 49.
Okay. I like it. Let me just jot that down from my notes. So I think this week could possibly finally get on to a winning streak. All you need is one game to finally get back to the streak. I'm feeling pretty good. It's going to be this week. I am going to take the Cincinnati Bengals plus the 4.5.
Okay.
Like we talked about earlier, they're hot. They're a good story. They shouldn't even be here. And you know, in Super Bowl past, those teams usually come out victorious.
Yes, sir.
So Joe Burrow's
nothing to lose.
All the pressure's on the Rams to win. Everyone thinks the Rams are going to win. The Rams think they're going to win. Majority of fans think the Rams are going to win. Nobody's giving the Bengals the credit that they deserve. I think Joe Burrow is going to try to get the job done. He might throw an interception or two, but it doesn't matter. They've been down before. They made comebacks. No lead's going to be safe. So give me them. I'm going to take the points because I think that they're not going to win straight out. But give me the plus 4, possibly win straight out.
Right.
Give me the 4 points just to
be safe. As a cushion, a little cushion, okay, for the pushing.
Give me a score prediction of like Rams 32, Bengals
28. I like it.
Give me that. It would be crazy if the Bengals win. We've said that, and we think it'd be crazy if they win each week. But Rams went all in. I think it's going to be a close game, as all the playoff games have been close to this point.
I'm excited no matter what. We really don't have a dog in the fight. We're just looking for a good fight.
Yeah, exactly. Just sitting back and enjoying football for what it's worth.
Exactly. We talked earlier. You always give your 2 cents to LeBron at the end. The Lakers, and we'll even mention the New York Knicks here for a second. Both franchises did nothing during the trade deadline. So, John, we'll get more into depth about the NBA season, what the LeBron and the Lakers are or aren't doing post-Super Bowl, because obviously Super Bowl 56 is the reason a lot of people tuned into this. We appreciate all the listeners. But in 30 to 45 seconds to wrap up your head and your thoughts about what the Lakers did not do during the trade deadline.
Lakers needed to do something, period, because whatever they're doing now isn't working. They lost to the lowly Trailblazers, who traded half their team away.
Eight
guys played, and we have LeBron and Anthony Davis. They couldn't get it done together. Couldn't blame this one on Westbrook. He wasn't even playing. You still had a top 20 player in Anthony Davis, top 20 player in LeBron, and you couldn't beat a team that had guys that should have been in the freaking G League. There was a report that came out a couple days ago that said Lakers would be willing to try to pursue a trade for John Wall to bring him to LA, but at the end of it was, as long as LeBron says it's okay. What possibly would make that okay? He's not the GM. He's not the owner. That's the only franchise where they're looking for a player to be like, hey, is it okay if we get this guy? Are you going to be cool with it? Nah, man, I'm not with that. I'm so sick of LeBron. I'm so sick of the Lakers. Rob Pelinka is in way over his head with this stupid-ass decision to trade for Westbrook. And now it's kind of like, well, we dug our hole. we might as well just sit in it. They'll be a one and done in the play-in tournament because there's no way that they're going to win anything.
I think the best thing the Lakers could look forward to right now is when Bronny James gets drafted, LeBron goes to his son's team.
That's the only thing, and I can't wait for it. I wish we never traded for Anthony Davis. I wish they never signed LeBron. And their draft equity, you know what they didn't want to give up? Was a 2027 first-round pick. What?
That's 5 years from now.
What? That guy's not even... You don't,
he's in eighth grade. He's in eighth grade.
That kid's in eighth grade.
You refused. Oh, you refused to trade away an eighth grader for this trade. But hey, like we said, more NBA talk around the corner. Big shout out and big thanks to Mr. Parag Patel coming on.
Yes, definitely.
Down with us on the Mush Squad.
The kid.
More guests coming. More guest analysis and experts coming. We are talking college hoops, we're talking NBA. We're going to blink our eyes, Young 12, and the Masters are going to be right around the corner. A lot of talk coming up for baseball season. Universal DH announced today. That's a big thing for the league. So we'll cover all of this. But either way, enjoy Super Bowl 56. Thanks for riding with us on the Mush Squad. Follow us everywhere, but specifically Instagram, at Mush Squad Podcast. We have our link in bio set up where you can listen to us on Spotify, YouTube, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts. We're on Twitter, we're on Facebook, and obviously Instagram. Big ups to all the people following, liking, subscribing, and sharing. John, any last words?
That's it. I mean, I'm looking forward to the Super Bowl. No dog in the fight. Let's want a really good game.
Yes, sir. Appreciate you as always. We'll catch you again next week, ladies and gentlemen.